Well, we're in Jeremiah, looking at verse 4 in Jeremiah. Or Jonah, I'm sorry. I'm so used to.
It's a J word.
I'm slipping back to all the years I taught Jeremiah. I'm sorry. We're looking at Jonah, chapter 1, verse 4. And I looked at verse 4, which says, "But the Lord sent out a great wind into the sea, and there was a mighty tempest in the sea, so that the ship was like to be broken." Well, when I looked at that verse, I just put above the verse, "The Lord speaks." Because the Lord is speaking. He speaks in ways that sometimes we don't expect him to. And he's certainly going to get everyone's attention. Warren Wiersbe says, "The consequences of Jonah's backsliding were tragic. He lost God's voice, for now God had to speak to him in a storm. He lost his spiritual energy and went to sleep in the hold of the ship. He lost his power in prayer, and even his desire to pray. The heathens were praying, but Jonah was sleeping. He lost his testimony with the men on the ship, and he lost his influence for good, because he was the cause of the storm. He also almost lost his life. But how patient and long-suffering the Lord was with him." So I like that. He lost God's voice. He lost his spiritual energy. He lost his power in prayer. He lost the desire to pray. He lost his testimony, and he lost his influence, and he almost lost his life. I was looking ahead in this chapter to the verse where the shipmaster or the captain of the ship comes to Jonah and says, you know, "What meanest thou, O sleeper? Arise and call upon thy God." And I was thinking, you know, you never hear Jonah doing that. As far as I know, the only time he called upon God is in chapter 2, verse 1, and then Jonah prayed. I don't know that he did that. It doesn't give a record of him calling upon God. The next thing that we find is they're going to cast lots to find out whose fault it is that the storm is there. And I thought, if that is the case, and we don't know for certain, that's a very sad condition to be in, to where it gets this bad and you're still not praying. So I just looked ahead and I thought, gee, I don't see him really doing what the captain asked him to do. So we're looking at the Lord actually speaking to Jonah in a roundabout way. He's trying to get his attention. Not only that, and the other thing I was thinking about is Jonah really, basically, his solution to the problem is, well, I'll just kill myself and jump over the ship. And the Lord's, of course, the Lord knows what he's going to do. The Lord prepared that great fish, but it's not like the Lord said to Jonah, "Jonah, I've got a fish waiting for you. Jump in that sea." It's like he's still trying to escape. It almost looks like he keeps trying to escape, and the Lord just will not let him escape, because that fish swallows him, and finally he listens to the Lord and calls upon the Lord. I just never thought about that before. But the Lord is speaking to him, and we find the wind and the storm and the ship in this verse. And when we look at the wind, it says, "But the Lord sent out a great wind into the sea." There's that. Whenever you find "but," God did something. But the Lord. And this is, of course, Jehovah. The word for Lord there is Jehovah. And he is the one who reveals himself. And he's obviously going to reveal himself not just to Jonah, but to the men in that ship. But the Lord will not let Jonah go. But the Lord will not let Jonah run. But the Lord will not let Jonah hide. But the Lord. He won't let him do any of those things. He's going to bring on the storm, but he's going to bring everybody through the storm. So, but the Lord sent out a great wind. And sent out just comes from a word that means to hurl or to throw or to cast it out. It has this idea of really force behind it. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown says the Lord caused a wind to burst forth. All of a sudden, it's just like out of the clear blue, bam, there's this huge wind that just bursts forth. And I bet it caught the sailors by surprise. They probably had sails on those ships and oars on those ships. And it's interesting, in the first chapter of Jonah, that Hebrew phrase, it's translated sent out, is repeated four times in this chapter. It is in verse 4, the Lord sent out a great wind. And in verse 5, the very same word is translated as they cast forth the wares that are in the ship into the sea. Cast forth. It's the exact same Hebrew phrase. Cast forth. And in verse 12, Jonah says, cast me forth. It's the very same word. And in verse 15, the sailors cast him forth. They did what Jonah asked. So that's repeated. It's just translated sent out or cast forth. You just see that throwing out, that action that precedes that word. And it really shows that the Lord really controls all things. And he could do that because, guess what? He created all things. He creates what he creates, he can control. And the Lord's really going to show man, basically, that he has no control. And the sailors are going to be the ones that are going to learn this first. Finally, Jonah will. But the sailors are really going to learn that we just have no control over the weather. So he sent out a great wind. And great really, just emphasizes the importance of something or the size of something or the significance of something. And the word great is repeated in Jonah seven times. Well, actually more than seven times, but there is a great city that is mentioned. And that's mentioned in verse 2 and in chapter 3, verse 1 and verse 3. And in chapter 4, verse 11. So it's still a great city. It's like one subject that's great, even though it's mentioned several times. There's a great wind that's mentioned in this verse, verse 4. There's a great fish that's mentioned in verse 17. And as I mentioned last week or the week before, Jonah was afraid the Lord would show great kindness. Whenever the Lord does something, it's on a great scale. Now, man's the one that built that great city. God's the one that sends that great wind and created that great fish and shows that great kindness. So the greatness of man just can't compare to the greatness of God. Whatever man builds that is great, God can tear down. And so he sends forth this great wind. And, that's like breath. It's his breath blowing almost. It is like it rushes upon them like a blast of the breath of God. It's really translated in other places as a windstorm or a whirlwind. You can have a whirlwind in the water, and what does it become?
Typhoon.
Or would that also be a cyclone? Cyclone and typhoon, they're the same thing. It just depends on what part of the world you're in.
Yeah, hurricane.
Right. Yeah, typhoon is Asian, and cyclone would be what we would call it. But it is a windstorm on the water that became a whirlwind. That kind of, you can just picture the ship being tossed about in such a way that, of course, they're going to be afraid it's going to break in pieces. But the Lord really often uses a whirlwind to do things and to show things. And this word here, wind, is translated as a whirlwind in 2 Kings 2:11. And over in 2 Kings 2:11, this is where we find the Lord taking Elijah up to heaven in a whirlwind. And 2 Kings 2:11 says, and it came to pass as they He and Elijah still went on and talked. Behold, there appeared a chariot of fire and horses of fire that parted them asunder, and Elijah went up by a whirlwind into heaven. That's the same word that's used for wind here. It's just translated whirlwind in reference to Elijah being caught up to heaven. So this was a whirlwind on the water that the Lord used. When the Lord spoke to Job, and he spoke to Job in two times of, using this phrase, in Job 38 and verse 1, it says, "And the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind." And I have written in the Bible there that the Lord answered for Job, or on behalf of Job, out of the whirlwind, because he is going to actually defend him. But he did it out of the whirlwind. So was there an actual whirlwind there that that those three friends saw and Job saw and the Lord answered on Job's behalf?
The whirlwind was just the storm he was in,
mm-hmm.
the condition of his life.
But there, yeah, that was the condition of his life, but there may have been a manifestation also. But that was the condition of his life. It also says in Job 46, "Then answered the Lord unto Job out of the whirlwind." So, you know, it's interesting that you really see the force and the power and the strength of the Lord used in this phrase in connection with how he speaks to Job and how he speaks to those on behalf of Job in a way where they can do nothing but just hunker down and let the Lord speak. The whirlwind also is used, translated, because I looked up this, ran my little reference where this word is used, and it's also used in Jeremiah 30, verse 23, and there it's used specifically to express the fury of the Lord, or especially pertaining to judgment. And in Jeremiah 30:23, it says, "Behold, the whirlwind of the Lord goeth forth with fury, a continuing whirlwind. It shall fall with pain upon the head of the wicked." There it's specifically speaking of judgment, the unstoppable force of God's judgment. Here, the wind is the voice of God speaking in a way that everybody can hear. They can't ignore it. The Lord has got their attention. And so there was a great wind that was sent into the sea. And I was really struck by this because the Lord really controlled the direction of where that wind was going. That's a pretty big sea. And yet that wind was sent into the sea. It had a specific direction. And it focused, it looks like, on a pretty narrow area of that sea, just on that one ship in that sea. You know, there may have been a lot of other ships, and I'm sure there were other ships on that sea, and this is probably the Mediterranean, where they were sailing around, and as far as we know, this is the only ship that really encountered this wind. It really spoke to my heart that the Lord is very specific when he speaks, when he directs his energy towards trying to get somebody's attention. And it was into the sea. And you really see how specific the Lord is when he directs his power over the wind. You know, he created the wind, he created the sea, he created everything, and he has control over it. And especially for the wind, back in Egypt, when the Lord wanted to bring judgment upon the Egyptians, it says that he brought an east wind upon the land all day long, and something came with that east wind. Locusts came with that east wind. It says in Exodus 10:13 that the Lord brought an east wind upon the land, and it was there all day long and all night long. And when it was morning, the east wind brought the locusts. So it's very specified, focused. And there again, when the Lord wanted to get rid of those locusts, it says, "And the Lord used, turned a mighty strong west wind, which took away the locusts and cast them into the Red Sea. So when he was done with the locusts, he just took the wind and brought it in another direction and moved all those locusts out into the Red Sea. And you find that in Exodus 10:19. And then when he parted the Red Sea, it says, the Lord caused the sea to go back by a strong east wind all that night and made the sea dry land, and the waters were divided. There again, you see how the Lord can really fine-tune and focus whatever he has created so that nobody else is affected by it. As far as we know, that strong east wind that blew all night long and part of the Red Sea didn't seem to touch anywhere else except that localized area where the sea was. Isn't that interesting how the Lord does things like that? My point being is when the Lord speaks to people, by whatever method he uses, he makes sure that the method that he uses is directed exactly towards those that he wants to get the attention of. And he wanted to get the attention of Jonah, but he has to first get the attention of those sailors in order to get the attention of Jonah, because all of this is going on and Jonah's, I don't know how he's not aware of it, because he's, you know, in the belly of the ship and it's probably being tossed to and forth, and it wouldn't feel normal where it'd be quiet and still. You'd think he'd wake up, but he didn't wake up. And the result of that great wind was a mighty tempest, a great storm. And mighty is the same exact word as great, you know. It's the same Hebrew word. It's translated great wind and mighty tempest, so it's the same word. Here, what you find with that great wind is it's there for a purpose. It's there to create a storm. You know, it's not just going to blow by and go on its way. It's going to stay there a while and stir things up and create a mighty, great tempest. And the word for tempest would be a hurricane or a cyclone. Remember, the wind is like a whirlwind? Well, now it's hitting the water, and that whirlwind hitting the water is going to create a hurricane or a cyclone. So we find the type of wind that it was, and we find the strength of the wind that it was, and this just really shows the absolute power of God. I had a scripture reference for this verse in my Bible, and the reference that I had for this verse was Psalm 136, verse 5. And the reference says, whatsoever the Lord pleased, that did he in heaven and in earth and in the seas and in all the deep places. So the Lord does whatever he pleases. And those sailors, being sailors, had probably run into storms before. And they were familiar with them. And they probably feared them. Now they're going to have to face a storm. You can be familiar with something and you can be afraid of it, but the Lord's going to make them face it. And they're going to realize that when they try to face it in themselves, they find out they have nothing that can stand against it. Turn over to Psalm 107 and look at verses 23 through 26, because it is this type of storm that God uses to declare his power unto men. He uses storms for many reasons, as judgment, sometimes just to get men to acknowledge his power. And he's using this type of storm to declare his power. And so Psalm 107, verses 23 through 26 says, they that go down into to the sea in ships, that do business in great waters, these see the works of the Lord, and his wonders in the deep. For he commandeth and raiseth the stormy wind, which lifteth up the waves thereof. And they mount up to the heaven, and they go down again to the depths, and their soul is melted because of trouble. And sailors would be familiar with this, and this is a really good verbal description of probably what it looked like when that great wind created that mighty tempest. It was like the waves rose up to the heavens and then they went down to the deeps again. It's just overwhelming. And this is the type of storm that Jesus showed he had the power over when he was in that ship with his disciples. Because it says in Matthew 8:24 that there arose a great tempest in the sea, insomuch that the ship was covered with the waves, and Jesus was asleep. Well, he's not asleep like Jonah is. He's aware of what's going on. And when he's woken up, he's going to do something about it. He's going to show his power. And when his disciples wake him up, he says, well, why are you afraid? And what does he do? He speaks to the storm and says, peace be still. And the waves are stilled. And there was a great calm. It is this type of storm that struck the ship that was Paul was in, that was carrying him to Rome. Remember that great storm that he was in? It was called Euroclydon, which means a northeasterner. It was called in Acts 27:14 a tempestuous wind, a violent wind of the character of a typhoon. Paul faced this kind of storm. And in a sense, the sailors in that ship are a lot like the sailors in this ship, where they are afraid for their life. They're going to be casting everything overboard. And the Apostle Paul calms them and prays to God. And Jonah doesn't seem to be able to do that. And so we find what is affected by this storm, the ship. The place where Jonah thinks he's secure. The place where he has run to that's going to carry him as far away from Nineveh in the opposite direction as possible. But we find that when that great storm, which became that great wind, which became a great storm, hit that ship, it says, so that the ship was like to be broken, or the ship was about to be broken up, or broken in pieces. It looked pretty bad. The ship looked like it was just about to be broken in pieces. Vine says, when you look up that word broken, it means to break or to shatter or to smash or to crush. That shows you how strong those waves were as they beat against that ship. Vine says this word is found almost 150 times in the Hebrew Bible. And the first biblical occurrence is in Genesis 19:9, which tells how the men of Sodom threatened to break Lot's door to take his house guests. It's the first time that word break or shatter. And it really gives you an idea of they weren't just pounding on the door, knocking on the door. They were probably trying to do everything they could to break it in pieces, as a mob would. So you get the idea of the force behind what they were trying to do in Sodom. I hadn't really thought about that. The common word for breaking things describes the breaking of an earthen vessel, like a vessel that's broken. Sometimes it is used figuratively to describe a shattered heart or emotion. And I thought about it in this light. Not only is a ship about to be broken in pieces, but their hearts are about to be broken and shattered by fear. And Jonah's is about to be broken and shattered. So we see how imminent and impending the danger was to this ship. It was about to be broken up, but it was not. The Lord only went so far. So they looked at what was going on, and they could see the ship was about to break in pieces, and yet it was not. The Lord kept it together, even though he shook the ship around so much that they saw that destruction was imminent. And the Lord wanted them to acknowledge him. He wanted them to cry out. And so they go through that great storm without the ship being destroyed on one hand, because for the sailors, he wants them to see how futile their gods are. and how great the God of Jonah is. So sometimes the Lord brings people right to the brink of utter chaos and destruction, but he never really takes them over the edge, because he's just waiting for them to acknowledge him, to cry out unto him. And that's what he's doing here. The ship wasn't shattered, but their will was, and their hearts were. They broke long before the ship ever did. So we see the strength and the restraint of the Lord. It's amazing how balanced he is in all things, how he has this great force that goes forth, and yet he has this great restraint that doesn't let go too far. Everything is measured. And you see that in the way that he dealt with his people, Israel. He could have utterly destroyed them, and he did not. This is about the ship being broken in pieces, and yet it was not. It's about the danger of that ship sinking, and yet it was not. And what you see here is the grace of God, because he's just waiting for a response. And he knows that they will respond. They needed to see how helpless they were, and they needed to see how hopeless that situation was. The first response from the sailors was not to Jonah, and it wasn't to go wake him. Their first response was really to pray to their gods. Brother Wiersbe says, first of all, concerning Jonah, he lost the voice of God. We don't read that the word of the Lord came to Jonah, but that a great storm broke loose over the waters. You know, the Lord could have said to Jonah, the word of the Lord could have come to him in the belly of the ship and said, Jonah, wake up, you need to go up above board and you need to do this. But it didn't, because he had blocked out the Lord speaking to him, and the Lord was going to use another way to do it. He chose to speak in this way. So, Brother Wiersbe said he lost the voice of God. But that great storm broke loose over the waters. God was no longer speaking to Jonah through his word. He was speaking to him through his works. I thought that's really good. And the Lord will find a way to speak. If you won't listen to this method of his getting your attention, he'll use another method to get your attention. So instead of speaking to Jonah through his word by coming to him and saying, thus saith the Lord, he just spoke to him through his works. Creation, that storm, that wind, that was his breath. He was still speaking. The sea and the wind and the rain and the thunder and even the great fish, he spoke to Jonah through all those things. It's just going to take the great fish, and it's going to take actually being in the great fish 3 days and three nights before he really prays. Now that's a sad place to be in, but the Lord preserves him until he comes to his senses and cries out to him. Everything in nature obeyed God except his servant. And I thought that was really good. Everything obeyed him but his servant. God even spoke to Jonah through the heathen sailors. And really, we'll see when the heathen sailors confront him, they say, you need to pray to your God because we are in dire straits here. And so God's trying to get Jonah to pray, and to acknowledge him, to submit to him, to call out to him. So he's going to use whatever and whoever he can. And so God even spoke to Jonah through the heathen sailors who didn't know Jehovah. It's a sad thing when a servant of God is rebuked by pagans. And John Phillips says, once free of the land, the vessel rose and fell with the swells of the mighty Mediterranean. Soon the coastline of Phoenicia and Philistia were out of sight, and then a howling storm raged over the sea, tossing the ship this way and that, and the terrified sailors thought that it would burst apart at the seams. And what he said, the next thing that Brother Philip said that was so good, is he said, when Jonah ran away from God, he upset the whole balance of nature. Now, does that not remind you? Israel is out of the will of God, and is not everything else out of balance here in the world today? So when the servant of God runs away from God or is not yielding to God, then everything else around him is out of order also. So I thought that's good. Jonah ran away from God, and he upset the whole balance of nature. And you can see that same principle even in our own lives. If we are out of the will of God, if we are running away from God, then everything in our surrounding area, it's like a pebble that goes into the pool that casts out ripples. Everything is affected by that. And when our lives are in order and are yielded to the Lord, everything else is in order. And that Israel, in a sense, is a picture of Jonah. Or Jonah, I guess, is a picture of Israel, who's out of the will of God, and everything in the earth is affected by that attitude. And it's going to take them going through judgment before they finally call upon the Lord and go preach to the Gentiles like they're supposed to be preaching to the Gentiles and fulfilling their ministry and their mission. So any comments?
Well, I just kept thinking when you first read that great wind into the sea, I was thinking the Gentiles,
yep.
The nations,
mm-hmm.
The judgment that's coming to the nations.
You can really see the Jews and the Gentiles here and how their interaction with them and what their true ministry should be toward them.